In Mark chapter 13, Jesus begins what we know of is called the Olivet Discourse. And the discussion actually begins when the apostles and the disciples look around at the great buildings of the temple and they comment on it to Jesus. And Jesus says, well, you know, you see all these buildings here? There's a time they are not going to be here. They're going to be destroyed. And I think that the apostles were not prepared for that. They were not prepared to hear that the thing that represented God's people, the thing that represented God's plan, was going to be taken out of the way. Jesus goes on in that discussion, although, you know, we're not going to read the whole thing. But he goes on in there, he'll talk about all the things that are coming, the things that they need to be prepared for, the things that, despite those things, they still aren't going to need to be faithful. And it is interesting, in Luke's version of this, in Luke chapter 17, verses 26 through 30, basically he says that all the people of the world, they're just going to be going about their business as usual. They're not going to know the destruction is coming upon them. They're just going to act like things are just like they always have been. And yet, indeed, judgment does come. But more importantly, for the disciples, salvation comes for those whose faith can see the hand of God in the midst of all of that. And it gets hard to see the hand of God in the midst of turmoil. But that's why I've decided to take a look at three stories from the Old Testament where I think people are able to see God in the midst of sometimes personal turmoil, sometimes communal turmoil. They don't see what's happening. Or I should say, they feel like they have to have some reassurance from God as to what's happening. And the first story is, as was read, is about Hannah. Hannah being Samuel's mother. We were talking about Samuel some in class this morning and how what a great judge that he was. And the story of Hannah, of Samuel's birth, is in effect, first of all, the story of Hannah. One of the things we need to realize here is the times in which this happened. If you just look back at the book of Judges, chapter 21 and 25. Now, this happened during the period of the judges, okay? But the judges was characterized by the following. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now, I don't know if that sort of borders on anarchy or not, but it's kind of something like that. Everybody had this idea that we're just going to do whatever I want because that's what I want to do. Okay, and, you know, it's not too awfully far removed from the kind of attitude that sometimes people have today. And so in the midst of all that, we have this story about Hannah. And by the way, we also have the story about Ruth during this very same time. And my guess is that they were not too far apart in terms of the time frame here. Samuel is born and, you know, perhaps one of David's ancestors is born by this time, or at least has been born by now. So it's kind of during the same time period. But it is, in effect, a story of redemption for her personally. And as it turns out, it becomes a story of redemption for the people of Israel, because Samuel is born. Just like in Ruth, the story of Ruth and her mother-in-law is a story of redemption for them personally, which ultimately becomes a story of redemption for Israel, because that's the story of David's ancestors. And so in both of these stories, we see the story of Samuel's ancestors and the story of David's ancestors being played out by the hand of God in a time for her personally, Hannah personally, which was very difficult. She had no children. Her husband had two wives, and the other wife had several children, and the other wife sort of egged her on and made it harder for her. And so Hannah is in anguish, and she prays to God. And as we see, she turns to God in anguish, and God responds. God heard the prayer of faith and anguish. And perhaps because of her, we have the story of Samuel. In fact, I have no doubt, because of the faith that she demonstrated in God and coming to God in prayer, we have the story of Samuel, we have the stories of redemption, and we have what we know today, ultimately, is the story of redemption in Christ. During moments of trial and anguish, we have to believe that God is going to hear us. And that's essentially the story of Hannah. Let's sing song 650, Send the Light. I think this particular passage, to me, demonstrates a considerably stronger form of faith than the faith it took for David to go against Goliath. I know that sounds a little odd, especially when you're, you know, going against an adversary that's quite a bit bigger than you and you've got basically rocks, you know, to face him. But if you look at what's happening here, the context really demonstrates, I think, why David is considered such a man of faith. By this time in chapter 30, he's been living among the Philistines, an exile from his own country, the country he's supposed to have been anointed king over, but he's had to run from Saul. In this chapter, he had been away from the camp, and when he returned, everything had been taken, including the wives of him and the wives of his men. Well, there's some interesting things here in light of what we were talking about this morning. First of all, the Amalekites did it. Those are the same people that Saul was supposed to completely destroy in chapter 16 and never did, or at least didn't destroy all of the goods that they had. So there's apparently some of them still around. The other thing that's interesting is the attitude of his own men. It says his own men wanted to stone him. There's talk of mutiny in the camp. And if you go back and you take a look at 1 Samuel chapter 22, verses 1 and 2, it says, David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. So very soon after he starts running away from Saul, who are the people who are gathered to him? These are people with an attitude. These are people that we might even consider, if people were looking for spies, looking for people to betray their own country, this is a pretty good cross-section of the kind of people they would be looking for. These are basically, shall I call them thugs? They're people who are running from something. And David gathers them around himself. These are all the people who gather themselves to David. This is a pretty unsavory group for the most part, other than his own brothers here. And so for them to turn around and say, well, you know, David needs to die, it's kind of not surprising, judging from their character and judging from what has just happened. This is kind of the last straw. But who does David have to turn to? Can't turn to his men, apparently, because they all want to get rid of him. And so who does David turn to? David, it simply says, and this just really doesn't describe, I think, his whole attitude in the full implication of it, but it just said, David found strength in the Lord his God. And so the story goes on that David calls the priest to come, and he tries to find out from God what he should do. And of course, the story goes that he does. But the point here is, praying to God, a man of faith, prays to God, and God hears. And God does what he asks. God delivers him in spite of having no support at all from the group that's around him and is supposed to be supporting him. God delivers him. Can that kind of faith do something for you? I'd like to think it can. And so as we think today about that, let's also think about it as we sing song number 452, Standing on the Promises. Once again, a little context is in order here. Elisha is the successor to Elijah, was one of the greatest of all the prophets of Israel. which I always find rather ironic that they considered him one of the greatest prophets. Nobody thought that when he was around. Nobody believed him. So if they thought it, they certainly didn't follow him. Okay, Elijah was the one on the Mount Carmel who challenged all the prophets of Baal, and then the queen tried to kill him. Okay, so Elisha is his successor. And Elisha is busy doing the Lord's work. And, you know, this is a rather interesting event here. It's like, who needs satellite surveillance when you got Elisha? And that's basically what's happening. He's telling the king of Israel all the troop movements for the other king, for his enemy. So he says, okay, he's over there. Well, I'm going to go over here. He's over there. Well, I'm going to go over here. And what does the king of Aram assume correctly? Somebody is spying. Somebody, there's a leak in my intelligence office. He thinks somebody is telling them what's going on. And it turns out Elisha's the one that is getting all this information. And so he tries to get and kill Elisha. And he sends his troops to where Elisha is. And in verse 14, they surround the city. And Elisha's servant, in verse 15, panics. So when the servant of the man of God rose early in the morning and went out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was all around the city. And the servant said, alas, my master, what shall we do? It's kind of a question that perhaps all of us want to ask at times, isn't it? What are we going to do? How are we going to get out of this? What's our future going to be if something doesn't change here? We're about ready to lose it here. And of course, Elisha is quite. This is probably a fairly well-known and memorable phrase. Do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Which his servant knows, in one sense, to be totally not true, because there's so many more troops out there. But in verse 17, it says, then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Some of you may remember the movie Chariots of Fire a number of years ago. This was the passage of scripture where that idea came from, that God protects his people. It didn't seem that way right at the given moment. There are probably plenty of other times where it doesn't seem that way. Certainly in our lives personally, as with Hannah and David, it doesn't seem that way. But we have to believe these stories. These stories are the very fabric of the narrative of God's people. And so I think we have to challenge ourselves at times. Do we believe this? Do we believe that those who are with us are more than those who are with them? Do we believe we're on the side of right? Even in spite of what sometimes can appear to be maybe not even a hopeless situation, but an unknown one. And sometimes the unknown seems kind of hopeless because we just don't quite know what to do. My encouragement today is simply take these stories to heart. When disaster strikes, be it personal, be it communal, be it like the one we've just encountered in our own state, as it would in Mark 13, disaster was going to strike, that's when the disciple has to assert his faith. That's when faith really becomes kind of raw faith, because you don't see how things are going to work out. But you believe in some way that God is going to provide a way. And so let's stand together and sing two verses of Trust and Obey, number 915.